So I grew up wanting to be a rich, famous novelist. Not just a novelist, but a rich, famous one.
Yeah.
I read a book called Youngblood Hawk, which is a story of a poor working kid from the South named Youngblood Hawk, who grows up to be a rich, famous novelist. And it's about 680 pages, weighs about 2.3 pounds. I know because I've weighed it. And I read it at the age of 12. And I remember reading it, staying up late at night, doing what my kids would call later sneak reading, which is you get under the covers with a flashlight. And so it kept me up nights running to finish this book. And during and after the process, I said, I want to do this. I want to write stories that keep people up late at night reading. And but I could never find the help wanted ad that said, rich famous novelist wanted will train. And
Yeah.
so I stumbled into journalism. I after college I went into the Peace Corps in West Africa, came home with no money and just basically the first story I ever wrote was a narrative. And I realized, you know what? I can get paid. Not very much, and it wasn't very much. I would make more as I got more experience. But it really happened in my early 20s that I realized I could make a living writing. It wasn't a great living. You know, as anybody, you know, as most writers will tell you,
I got so
I was in
excited
the
when I figured out how to live above the poverty line as a writer.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know that I did at the beginning. I didn't back then in 72, 73, I don't think I was even thinking poverty line. I had I just went from school and a very impoverished African nation, so I wasn't thinking
Yeah.
of
Right. Yep. Good
poverty
point.
line. Yeah, so it was back then. It was back then in my early 20s.
What do you think, what, like, so since there's not a help wanted sign for rich famous novelist, what are some of the things that you've discovered are the path to becoming a full-time, writer who can make a living off of writing?
Well,
Or
I
do you
think there are
think
a
there is
number
a
of paths.
path? Yeah.
Oh, okay. Is there a path? Yeah. I mean, in terms of making a living, I think, you can become a journalist. You can become an advertising copywriter. You can become a ghostwriter. I think there are a number of, if you will, revenue streams available to writers.
Yeah. But what
I
about
guess what I would
novelist,
say is,
like specifically?
yeah, like I said, I've written one novel, and it's a little novel with my former wife, Catherine Fair, called The Holly Wreath Man. And that was based on a newspaper serial novel that we published in about 65 papers across the country, which was pretty exciting to publish a 25 installment novel in newspapers.
Yeah.
I have basically focused on short fiction because pretty early on, I had a family to support. And so I needed a full-time job as a journalist, but I guess one of the paths is getting up really early, number one, before anybody else is awake to write.
Yeah.
To it's not a question of, I don't have time. It's a question of making time to write.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I
Yeah,
do this every morning.
and do you? Yeah,
Yeah, I
exactly.
mean,
So
when I'm not in Hong Kong.
right, okay. I mean, I get up just naturally early every morning now. And
Yeah.
so I think part of that is getting up early. The other part is learning to lower your standards. And I
What do
know
you
that's
mean
always
by lower
counterintuitive.
your standards?
Well, I mean, when you start writing, I think it's a it's a common affliction, writer's block. And I think that keeps people from becoming writers.
Yes.
Not just writers who get writer's block in the middle of a project. I'm talking about the people who dream like I did of being a writer and have
Right.
always wanted to be a writer. And but for some reason they're unable to do so. And I think the reason is that they have impossibly high standards for themselves. And I
Yeah.
think those standards are influenced by what they think other people think of them. And so I tell people, if you want to be a productive writer and a good writer, you need to lower your standards. I don't mean by that abandoning. Well, actually, that's not true. I tell myself, I don't just lower my standards, I abandon them. And I use free writing,
That's good.
right? I free write. And that's because I know that writing is all about one thing, and that's revision. So I need to get something down on the screen or on the page so that I can start messing with it. And until I get to that point, there's nothing I can do. I don't have any clay to work with. And
Yes.
so I've got to get clay, and I need to make clay. And so, my clay is words. And so I use free writing as a way to escape that little voice in your head that says you suck. And it's, the you suck voice. Actually, Sigmund Freud, in the interpretation of dreams, talked about it as a watcher at the gate. And it's the gate in your mind, and the gate is barring your creativity. And the way to do it is to not worry about whether to not and if it is so hard sometimes for people to realize how that it that it's possible to, when you say to them, don't worry if it's any good, just get something down. But when you have, if you realize that's the principle to lower your standards, and you have a technique which is free writing, then you can get work done. You can produce words at a pretty fast clip. And once you've done that, then you, and I'm a big believer in the printer. I'm looking at my printer right now, and I printed out the section of the novel I was working on today. Printed out 3 times. What I do is I print, I mark it up, I should make all the changes. I go back, I mark it up again, I hit print again, basically, wash, rinse, repeat. Wash, rinse, repeat. That's how I get my writing done. And so that to me is, to me, that's the path to prog that's the path to productivity. That's to me the path to productivity, is what I'm describing.
What do you consider a fast clip? Just out of curiosity, you said you could write it a pretty fast clip. Just so that anyone listening
Well,
has an idea to compare
sure.
to.
Well, I always think of it this way. A page of manuscript copy is 250 words double spaced, and I can probably type. My typing is really shitty. Okay, I'm a really bad typist, and so I make a lot of mistakes. But I probably generate maybe 160 words a minute. So I can get a lot down pretty quickly. In about 15 minutes, I can have, and I'm not talking about blasting. When you say free writing, it doesn't mean necessarily that your fingers are flying. Although when I do workshops with people, I will actually have them free write, and I will tell them, okay, you're going to put your pen to the pad, and you're not to lift up your hand. And until I say stop, and I only have them do it for 4 minutes. I did this recently with a group of marketing writers, and it was astonishing. Some of them wrote 200 words or more in 3 minutes by hand. And I'm sorry, I've lost track.
I was just asking about a fast, what you consider to be a fast clip, because
Oh yeah,
I
so
guess the
if you can
yeah.
if you can get 150 words down a minute, it doesn't really matter. If you get 10 words a minute, in 10 minutes you've got 100 words, in 20 minutes you've got 200 words, and that's more than enough to print out and start marking up. Because there's, to me, there's always been a difference. There's two types of distance. You need distance to revise. And there are two types. There's physical distance and there's temporal distance. Temporal distance, of course, means I'm just going to put it aside for a while and just let it sit. And I'm not going to think about it. And then I'm going to go back and it's going to look very fresh to me. But when you're on deadline, like I was and pretty much have been my whole life, you don't have that privilege. You have
Yeah.
to go physical distance, and by that I mean generating a printout. So that's how you do it.
Interesting. So I when I was a blog writer, that's when I had deadlines the hardest, because I would get something and I'd have to turn it around in a day. And so because I didn't have the benefit of time distance, I would just change my setting and change the way that I was looking at what I was writing. So I would listen. It was a lot of like converting podcast interviews into blogs. I would listen to the interview, and I would have the interview transcribed. I would listen to the interview, and I would just take notes on everything I thought was important. And then I would go to the gym, and while working out, I would organize my notes. And then I would go back home, and with the post-gym workout, endorphins running through my body, I would bang out the rough draft.
That's
And
great.
then I
Yeah,
would and then I
yeah.
would move the rough draft to some other medium where I could edit it. So it's a lot
That's a
of just
great.
moving around.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That's a good approach.
One of the reasons I was excited to interview Chip is because you have a when you were asked what's a commonly held belief about writing that you passionately disagree with, you shared an opinion that, at least on the face of it, sounds like it really disagrees with another opinion that I had on the podcast. You said that writing is a you said the thing you disagree with is that writing is a magic act reserved for artistic geniuses. Rather, it's a rational process, a series of decisions and steps that every writer makes and takes, no matter the deadline, genre, length. It can be studied and mastered by any literate person. And I've often had people I've a couple times had people on the podcast say that unfortunately, to be a great writer, you cannot have a repeatable process. Like you basically have to approach every piece of writing as a completely unique thing. I guess I want to first hear you unpack your point of view so that I can challenge it, pick it apart, and understand it.
Sure. Well, it goes back to the novel I read as a 12-year-old kid that made me wanted to that made me want to be a novelist. That
Okay.
made me want to be a writer. And I finished that book, and as I'm reading the book, I'm thinking, this guy is a genius. He's a magician. And I knew I was neither of those things. So I was screwed. And I didn't know what I was doing when I became a journalist. I mean, it was like hacking my way through a jungle when I was on deadline, hacking away at a typewriter. I would look at my notes, I'd be sweating. And so I basically just blundered my way through it. And fortunately, I had been reading, my whole life. So I had a certain amount of literacy. And I'd been reading newspapers too. So I had a certain amount of journalistic literacy. And so because of that, I was able to function, but not at a high level. And then I met my mentor, Donald M. Murray, who was a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and professor of English at University of New Hampshire. And he came to the Providence Journal in Providence, Rhode Island, where I was a reporter. And he was our writing coach. And he was one of the early writing coaches. And I was lucky enough to get into his first seminar. And literally the first thing he said to me was, and it's been tattooed and I've repeated it. I mean, I know what it's like to be a disciple because I have been a disciple of Don Murray ever since he said those words, that writing is a process that can be described and repeated. With that in mind, I have discovered that I can produce work by following this process. It's not a slavish process. I mean, basically, I don't think many writers would disagree with this idea that a writer begins with an idea, okay? It's an idea for a novel. It's an assignment for it's a ghostwriting assignment, but
Sure.
it's a piece of writing, okay? And so you got this idea. And what do you have to do? Well, I need some information. So maybe the writer interviews, or maybe the writer surfs the net, and collects information. And then the writer has usually, if they're good, they've collect and they're curious, because that's the hallmark of, I think, great journalists and great writers, is this, overwhelming curiosity, is that they amass this huge amount of material. And then they think, what does all of this mean? And so step three is they have to focus. They have to say, what does it all mean? And I always usually suggest answer that question in one word, because the principal definition of theme is meaning in a word. So you want to answer a question like that as a theme. Is it about corruption? Is it about defeat? Is it about love? Is it about amnesia, which is what my novel's about, basically? And then you have that as a guiding star. And then you have to say, well, where's all this stuff go now? What goes where? What's the beginning? What's the middle? What's the end? And that's the order stage of the process. And then and only then the writer drafts, begins to write. And finally the writer rises. Now the process is, as Murray taught, is recursive, means the writer is constantly recircling. It's not this lockstep. You know this, Timmy. You've started writing something, you realize, I need to talk to somebody. I need to talk to somebody else. I need more information. So I'm circling back to the reporting. Or, you know what? I've changed my idea what this is about, and I need to circle back to that. And so the process is a way to basically do what writers do, but puts a name on the steps.
Got it.
Now, the thing is, this can happen really quickly. People think, well, no, you just sit down and write. Yeah, but even if when you're sitting j down just to write, you don't sit down to write without an idea in mind. And even the act of writing is, in a sense, an act of reporting, especially if you're writing memoir. When you write, you are reporting, but you're interviewing yourself. So by the time you've actually, when you sit down to write, you've already gone through these steps pr very rapidly, I think. I mean, cognitively, I think it happens very quickly.
Yeah, I like this. Yeah, so you start with an idea, then it's collect information. You amass a huge amount of information. You ask, what does it all mean? Then you figure out after you can sum it all up in a word, you've tried to figure out what goes where. This is the order stage. Then you draft, then you revise. That's really good. One of the things that I've found for me personally when it comes to revising is I have got to get other people's opinion. And this could just be a manifestation of my imposter syndrome, but as especially like as a kids book author, part of my writing process is once I have a finished manuscript, I have to test it out on children. And so I will tour with unfinished manuscripts that I can test out on kids so that the book will ultimately be better. That's one way that I've found to get really good feedback on my work. But I feel like this is one of the difficulties for a lot of writers is how do you get really good writing, mentorship, feedback, discipleship. You talked about how like that you're the writing disciple of Don Murray. How do writers today get really good discipleship, mentor, feedback, etc.
I had a lot of bad editors, but fortunately, they in 22 years as a reporter, but fortunately, they were outnumbered by two or three who I worked with for extended amount of time. And so part of it is luck of the draw, And the other part is, I tell people, look, if you're at a place and you're not getting that, get out,
How do you
go
know you're
somewhere
getting
else.
bad versus how do you know you're getting good?
If it's destructive, if someone makes you hate your writing and hate yourself, you want to get the hell out of there fast. And I think people know what that is. If
What would you say to somebody that,
I had somebody I would share. I'm sorry.
oh, I was just going to
I
ask,
had
what would you
somebody
say to
I would share fiction with. I'm sorry, go
There we
ahead.
go.
Go ahead.
There's our Zoom delay showing up. I'll just do a little light editing here. What would you say to somebody who would say, because I remember when I was in college, one of the most memorable experiences I have was I had a writing professor. Honestly, this is the only time I ever felt like I was getting anything good out of college. So I had a writing professor that would just ruthlessly tear up my work. But in the end, she would praise it. So it was kind of a mix of both of like, you're a crappy writer in all these different ways, but this idea was good, and the way that you explored it here was good. And yeah, so what would you say to somebody who's like, well, you got to have people that can just tear you apart?
Well, I'm not sure I believe in that completely. What I tell people is when I, as a coach, work with people, I say, look, I'm going to tell you what works and what needs work. And so, and I look for ways pretty quickly to say what works. Because often when writers come to a conference, they're depressed. They're exhausted, they're wiped out. And they think what they've written is crap. And so sometimes I have to say, well, hey, the words are spelled correctly, and they'll laugh. And then, so I'll tell them, okay, I think this works, this works. Now, the second question, and I'll say, yeah, I know what doesn't work. And I'll stop and I'll say, no, I didn't say what doesn't work. I said what needs work. Because the difference between what doesn't work and what needs work is the difference between despair and hope. So I don't think necessarily you have to tear people's work apart. I can understand and appreciate why that would have been helpful to you. And it was helpful because she did tell you what worked. She told you pretty ruthlessly what needed, well, I suppose it was phrased as what didn't work, but she was in effect telling you what needed work. And so
There was a lot of despair in that classroom. I think I was probably one of the few people that felt good. So maybe she wasn't that
And
good of a professor.
well, I don't know. It's like I just, I honestly believe this to me. I believe everyone is a storyteller. And so if they work at writing, they can be a writer because it's in our DNA to tell stories since we were, in the cave around the fire. And everyone has stories. Everyone has stories to tell. Everyone can find other people's stories to tell. It's having an open mind. It's having the curiosity of a toddler. Toddlers look around and go, what's that? What's that? What's that? What's that? What's that? That's what great writers do. They're insatiably curious.
I think that storytelling, and I think, obviously I'm not saying anything that profound here, but I think that storytelling is probably one of the most important skills that anyone should develop in life, not just to be a writer, but to be a good communicator, to be good at anything, because storytelling is like, it's like a fast track into teaching something, because if you tell a really good story, you can incept an idea better than you could preach it. But at the same time,
I agree, and
I don't
go ahead.
necessarily feel that I'm a great storyteller, or at least that I'm great at the practical. Like I so often go for just saying the what of like what needs to be said instead of telling the story. How do you lead somebody to be like, how do you lead like an everyday person to be a better storyteller? Like, what are some of the like basic things that you have to get them to understand?
Well, this is pretty basic, but they have to understand that subject, verb, object, Jack fixed the car is the engine of narrative. And that active verbs, drive narrative, drive storytelling. It's very basic, but I mean, when I look at a first draft of mine, it's littered with was and were, and I have to go through those and eliminate them and instead say dangled or clung, or as opposed to was hanging or was clinging. It's basic stuff like that. And that's, I suppose that's somewhat that's somewhat mechanical. I guess the other thing I'd say is you have to read. Saul Bellow, the Nobel laureate, once said, "A writer is a reader moved to emulation." And if you want to write, you have to read, and you have to read a lot. And you can read anything you want, but you have to be a voracious reader. You have to absorb it, and in a sense, by osmosis, structure and technique and language play. The other thing is, you just have to write, and you have to swallow the bile that rises in your throat every time you sit at the keyboard, and your mind is telling you, you suck, and keep typing, and lower your standards, and just get something down. Whether it's you want to write a poem, I mean, people are choosing different things. They either want to write screenplays, or they want to write novels, or they want to write short stories, or they want to write blog posts, or
Children's books.
children's books, of course, like you. And I think your concept is brilliant because the idea of business leaders writing about their subjects for children. I remember as a reporter friend of mine, she was chronicling the building of a skyscraper. And I remember her telling me the best sources for her for all the technical information were children's books.
There's
Because
a
that
quote that,
explains.
oh,
Yeah, go ahead. What
sorry,
is it?
Zoom delay. I was going to say there's a quote that is attributed to Einstein. He might not have said it, but he said, if you can't explain it to a 6-year-old, then you don't understand it yourself. And I love telling
That's
people
good.
that in sales conversations.
Yeah.
But I cut off your thought. What were you about to say about the person that does skyscrapers?
Oh no, just that was the whole thing that she found that her best source for understanding and communicating how skyscrapers are built were children's books
Got it.
on construction and architecture.
Interesting. I think that there's some question around whether a children's book can deliver high level, high value content. And I, of course, believe that it can. I think that it has an incredible amount of potential because you get about 600 words, and you have to say something super, you have to say something very sh with a very short word count, very succinctly. And it's a fun challenge. I wanted to ask you, okay, switching gears. When we were talking in before we hit record, I asked you about your POV and I told you about what I've heard said on this podcast before, and it made you go, well, there's a difference between the process and the path. What did you mean by that?
Oh, okay, yeah. And I have to be honest, that's something that just occurred to me. As I said, as a teacher, I love that. I love that. I always thought of teaching as jazz. I was always prepared. I knew my subject, but I didn't come in with a script. And so things would just bubble up. Okay. So as we were talking, I realized, thinking about this novel I'm working on, that there is a process. But there is a path, and my path, in a way, takes me to different. Well, let's see. My path is one of discovery. Writing, above all, is a process of discovery. And I have worked on this novel for, well, I'm not ashamed, but whatever. I've worked on it for a long time and got blocked years ago, and just recently picked it up again. And so I have this draft material, right? But now what I'm doing is I'm taking what is draft material and honing it into what is emerging as fiction. You talked about getting feedback. I don't have the chance yet to share an entire manuscript, but I've got I'm from a family of six, and I've got a really close friend, and Becky Blanton, who you interviewed before, is a close friend. I basically call people up and say, "Hey, listen to this. It's important for me to share, and to a certain extent, you want to get a pat on the back. This is great, but I also want to know if they have questions." I read something my brother the other day, yesterday, and he said, "Where's this coming from? I don't understand this." And I realized I hadn't provided any context. So the difference between process and path. So there's this process they laid out, right? Okay. But the path can be different. The path can be different for each project. Okay. So for me right now, my path involves right now focusing on drafting and ordering. Okay. So I've got post-its up on a wall because this novel, although it only takes place over a period of several months in the waning days of World War II, I've got at least 50 characters so far. Now I only have really five. I have three major characters. Two, they're not minor characters, but they're sub-major, if that's a word. They're sub-major characters. And then I've got a bunch of, if you will, cameos, people that are walk-ons. They're propelling the narrative. So I'm focusing on the thing I've done most recently is I've just put as much as I could on post-its on the wall. And then I've just taken these post-its off and I've said, okay, I'm writing this section now. I don't know where it's going to fit in the novel. I just know I have to get as much written as possible. I have to get as much drafted as possible that makes sense to me. And so that's my path right now. I'm still hewing to the idea that, well, I began with an idea, and I've done a lot of collecting. I'm still working on organization. I have a focus. I mean, I finally, through a lot of hard work and thinking, have settled on my theme, but I'm working on ordering right now, and I'm also, I suppose you could say drafting, but I've already, this is the first draft, this is the second draft, so I wouldn't say I'm revising as much as I think of it as layering. That was a term Don Murray used to use. He would just go back into a piece of writing over and over and add different layers to it. So I'm not sure. Is this making any sense?
Basically, there's a process, but the path that you take in trying to follow that process is going to be different for every project.
Okay. Yeah,
That's
that's
at least
basically
how
what I
I'm
mean.
interpreting it.
Yeah. That's it.
Do you think there's a difference between the job of a writer and the job of an author?
Well, the only difference is a writer is someone who writes, an author is someone who's published. And I would tell people, you want to be a writer? Right. That makes you a writer. Anybody who writes is a writer. But the next step and the harder one, as you know, is getting published. I got published a lot as a journalist and then as a textbook author and editor of volumes and a novel. And those were published. Those made me an author. 3 years ago, I decided, I've been that route. I've been trying to sell to agents. I've worked with publishers. I mean, my textbooks were published by Oxford University Press, which is very prestigious. It sounds great. My mom was really happy about it. But I wasn't exactly pleased with the process. And I decided the next two of my books I would self-publish. Now, the novel I'm working on, I would like it to be published. I would rather not self-publish it. Who wouldn't dream of being reviewed in the New York Times, who wouldn't dream of being interviewed by Terry Gross? So that's my dream. that's not achieved, then I'll self-publish it. But a writer is somebody who writes, as and an author is someone who's published.
You
That's
said
it.
you're about to self-publish. You're about to self-publish your next two works, or you said
No,
that
I
you're
said I have self-published.
you
You
have
mentioned
self-published.
33. Yeah, you mentioned 33 ways not to screw up your journalism and writers on writing.
That's right.
Those were
Got it.
self-published. Inside it was
Okay.
self-published.
Just out of curiosity, what have been the most successful ways for you to get people to buy those books? And if you don't have a good answer to
Conferences?
that question, that's okay.
No,
Oh,
no.
conferences.
Conferences are good. 33 ways not to screw up your journalism. Journalism conferences are good venues to sell the book. I've also found, I've also found using, I use basically social media. I'm a writer, Timmy. I'm not a marketer. I'm just, it's not my,
This is why I like asking this question, because I think the job of writer and the job of author are two completely different jobs. I think the
Yeah,
job
I
of
agree.
writer is to write great work, and the job of author is to sell that work.
Yeah, and I'm better at writing it than I am selling it, and I think
Yeah.
that's true of a lot of writers.
Yeah.
They're better at writing than they are selling, and maybe the really successful ones. Well, I can't decide. Are the really successful ones successful because they've written fantastic stuff, or that they're better at selling themselves? And I'm not
That's a
sure if I know the
great
answer. I
question.
do know this. There's a lot of great work that has not been published, and
And a lot of mediocre work that has been. And I find that
yes,
encouraging.
yeah, I do too. I do
All
too. Although I want to be a
right.
performer, I want to be a performer.
That's understandable. I think this strategy brain in me is like, oh my gosh, look at all this mediocre work that's been published. The bar is so low. Even I can go over it.
Right.
Chip, I feel like this is a good spot to end the interview, although I could keep talking to you about this question. If listeners were to go to one place to check you out, where would you want to send them?
Chipswritinglessons.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being a guest.
Thank you very much, Jimmy. It was my pleasure.